this is really sad that the government has been doing one thing after another just to inflame tensions even more and more.
The Hong Kong government tries a new tact against protesters. This is Friday, the 4th of October, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You want to be a part of this program, and we want you to do that. So join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, parts of India are underwater in the wake of heavy monsoon rains. The U.S. Marine Corps wants to make changes in reaction to the growing military posture of China. And a major effort is underway to save the coral reefs off the coast of a U.S. state. All on VOA Asia. Hong Kong might very well be under an emergency measure that would include a ban on face masks in an attempt to quell the violent anti-Beijing protests that have rocked the financial hub since last June. Joining us is Victoria Tinbor Haye, a political science professor at the University of Notre Dame in Indiana. Victoria, thanks for being with us. Is this going to do anything as far as stopping the protest, number one, or making them go the other way?
This is going to inflame tension even more. The most important thing is that so people are already talking about, especially the Civil Human Rights Front immediately put out a statement. If you are going to ban protesters from wearing face masks, police officers themselves have to wear face masks. In a way that if this is going to happen, that the police, the officers and protesters, all of them do not wear face masks. That, in a way, could be a good thing because there have already been proven cases of officers dressed up as protesters throwing petrol bombs and setting things on fire. So if everyone shows his or her face, then that may actually stop this kind of acts by agents provocateur. And then at the same time, I think that people are not going to really take it. There's already talk that tomorrow immediately that everyone should just wear a mask to go on the street and also put slogans and stuff on the face mask.
Well, that was my question. You know, how many people are going to say, how many police officers are going to say, oh, I'm not going to wear any mask whatsoever? That's not going to happen, right?
That is not going to happen. And in fact, the pro-Beijing legislature is already saying that, oh, the police are different because they are doing law enforcement, so they can put on the mask. So if the police officers, they put on the mask and ban people from wearing that, that really is just going to backfire. And this is really sad that the government has been doing one thing after another just to inflame tensions even more and more.
Well, just to put the other side out here, the other side is that something has to put an end to this. But what realistically do you think could happen to put an end to all of this?
The answer is actually very obvious, and it's been going on for some time already, because already in July, even the very pro-Beijing, pro-establishment organizations, including the Hong Kong Chamber of Commerce, and also a lot of these pro-business legislators have been saying that we need to have an independent investigation of police abuses. In a way, this is also a good policy for the government side, because an investigation is surely to last for, you know, a year or so. And in the meantime, then you can just calm down the tension. And people may wait and see what's going to happen. And then a year later, it may be very difficult for people to remobilize again. So it's really a win-win situation. It's surprising that the government has not done that.
Well, you know, obviously some orders are being taken from Beijing by the Hong Kong government. And do you expect them, the Beijing government, to say, okay, let's do this and get rid of it, you know, and just stop everything?
You are quite right to point out that if the Hong Kong government were in charge, that they probably would have done so much earlier. Precisely because Hong Kong is not in charge, it is really Beijing calling the shot. The Hong Kong government has very little autonomy, and Hong Kong's police officers also openly reboot even the chief secretary, who was making a non-apology earlier in late July, just saying that, oh, there's some discrepancy between citizens' expectation, our performance. And so given it seems that the police officers are answering more to Beijing and to the liaison office in Hong Kong, therefore this is unlikely. But they have to understand that every single repressive act that they've been doing has only inflamed the situation rather than silencing the opposition. So for Hong Kong people, they see this as the last stand, because they see that the Hong Kong government really has no autonomy. If they really do not keep fighting, then they think that Hong Kong will just die.
Victoria, as always, I thank you very much for joining us here on VOA Asia, and hopefully we can talk again in the near future.
Thank you.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now at voanews.com. U.S. President Donald Trump is openly urging foreign governments to investigate Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden in an allegation previously leveled at the U.S. president, which has already prompted an impeachment inquiry. And he's also calling for China to conduct a similar investigation, alleging without providing evidence that the former vice president and his son scammed the two countries. A China-Australia rift deepens as Beijing tests overseas sway. Instead of a verdict, a Cambodian judge orders a new investigation of a reporter's spy case. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and find it on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues now. More than 100 people have died in just the past week as floods caused by heavy monsoon rains inundated parts of the Bihar and Uttar Pradesh states in northern India. Hundreds have died since the monsoon season started in June. Power outages, disrupted transportation, and shortages of clean water added to the misery of the affected population. More from VOA's Lata Chahok.
The heaviest monsoon rains to hit India in 25 years have killed more than 1,600 people since June. Exceptionally heavy rainfall in the past week left residents of Patna, the capital of Bihar, without running water and electricity on Wednesday.
There is no electricity. Drinking water is delivered, but there are 8 apartments in the building with 3 or 4 family members in each, and the government is providing 3 to 4 bottles of water for all of us. So how can one survive with one sip of water for the entire day?
The government also has provided some food for those who had to evacuate from their homes. The situation is believed to be worse in some rural areas where people get no assistance. Railway traffic, movement of vehicles, healthcare services, schools, and power supply have been disrupted in Bihar and in neighboring Uttar Pradesh. People have waded through deep water to reach water trucks and food markets.
The prices of vegetables have doubled. The flood spoiled most vegetables, and so there is a short supply.
More than 40 people have perished in Bihar and more than 90 in Uttar Pradesh in the past week. Officials say in addition to drowning, many have been killed by fallen trees and collapsed houses, as well as snake bites.
The 4 deaths in Patna were a result of a tree falling on a car, so the toll as of yesterday evening is 42.
The western state of Maharashtra also has been lashed by heavy rain. Nearly 3,000 people were moved to higher ground until the waters recede. The monsoon season typically lasts between June and September, but it has stretched into October this year. Officials say it has already dropped 10% more rain than a 50-year average, and it's not over yet. But the rains are expected to ebb on Monday. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, North Korea said Thursday it had carried out its first underwater launch ballistic missile test in 3 years, an apparent bid to dial up the pressure on the United States ahead of a weekend resumption of their nuclear diplomacy. North Korea said that the missile was launched from a submarine. The Pentagon, however, rejects that, saying the short to medium range missile was not launched from a submarine. This is VOA Asia. The U.S. Marine Corps needs to make some changes, they say, to counter China's long-term existential threat to the United States. That according to the head of the force. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb joins us from the Pentagon. Carla, explain, if you will.
So the newly appointed Commandant of the Marine Corps, General David Berger, came up with a new vision for the Corps, and it's actually quite a controversial one on certain points. He is saying that he wants to focus the Marines more on the Pacific region, which means he's going to be taking away some forces from the Middle East. He said that the U.S. is just going to have to accept some more risk in the Middle East in order to get prepared for a potential fight with China. He's also said he doesn't want to see big, massive landings. He wants to disperse the Marines into smaller units to avoid being targeted. And he has developed a plan that puts them more integrated with the Navy. And in order to do this and prepare for China, he says he needs some new devices. He needs ways to attack moving targets that are, you know, further than 350 nautical miles. He needs a lot of new capabilities. And so when asked how he's going to pay for these capabilities, he actually said that he may have to shrink the force and become a smaller Marine force in order to become more modernized to better equip itself to potentially fight China.
Did he give any specific reasons or possibilities of what might have to be done and why he needs this extra equipment and changes?
Well, I'm not aware of what General Berger has said on the fact, but I have spoken with a couple of people that have just been mentioning this problem with China. I was talking to the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy's Bradley Bowman, and he has said to me multiple times that if there was a fight with China, the U.S. forces that aren't already in the Pacific would never get there because they're such a strong competitor and this is a new era. I actually presented that exact question to General Stephen Lyons. He's the head of U.S. Transportation Command. He's the guy responsible for getting the forces to the Pacific if needed. And he said, well, I wouldn't say that they wouldn't get there, but we would certainly have to fight our way through. There would be a significant amount of competition, he told me. And he said that maybe even pre-positioning forces is something that he's constantly discussing with the head of U.S. Pacific Command.
Overall, How is the U.S. military looking at China now, in your opinion?
I think that China is by far the number one issue for the military. Modernizing to make sure they stay ahead of China is their number one concern.
Carla Babb reporting from the Pentagon. As always, Carla, thanks.
Thank you.
Coming your way, trying to save what is left of Hawaii's coral reef. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia, senior Afghan Taliban leaders and Pakistani officials Thursday called for the resumption of talks on a peaceful resolution to the war in Afghanistan. This appeal, made during a rare Taliban visit to Islamabad, comes after months-long U.S. Taliban negotiations collapsed in September, President Trump announcing the talks with the insurgents were dead. VOA Asia continues now. Hawaii's vibrant reefs are home to amazing populations of corals and fish, which are under growing stress and danger from a spike in nearby ocean temperature. A similar underwater heat wave damaged the reef 4 years ago. Now researchers are using divers and satellites to study these corals and find ways to protect them. VOA's Jim Randall has our story.
Bright-colored data show Hawaii's reefs in trouble. Brighter colors mean hotter water more likely to damage coral by bleaching. Some signs of bleaching corals greet divers in Hawaiian waters. The reefs are still recovering from an ocean heat wave 4 years ago. Scientists are studying the ecosystem as they seek ways to preserve it for future generations. Linking underwater observations with satellite data could help.
Every dive is just a small little taste of what's going on. So what's really important here is that we're taking these measurements, connecting them to our aircraft data, and then connecting them again to the satellite data. And that lets us scale up to see the big picture to get the truth about what's going on here.
Hawaii's coral reefs are critical, say experts. Not only do they attract tourists who boost the economy, the reefs help protect Hawaii's beaches and facilities from storm waves and floods. They also account for a quarter of sea species, even though they're just a small slice of the ocean. Reefs are the most diverse marine ecosystems on Earth, says oceanographer Jameson Gove.
Corals provide habitat for fish, and these are fish that are important for ecosystem functions. These are fish that are sustenance for local people, and of course our economy, whether it's through tourism or, say, commercial fisheries.
This is what healthy reefs around the world should look like. Scientists worry that warming waters will cause Hawaii to lose this splendor and jeopardize many important fish species. Researchers and divers are seeing signs of reef bleaching many places. They're urging visitors to Hawaii to avoid further stressing the reefs by touching them, by using certain types of damaging sunscreens, and by not catching certain types of fish that help the reef.
While this news is depressing, I think that there is still reason for hope. You know, there were corals in Hawaii and around the world that survived previous bleaching events, and there are corals that will survive this bleaching event. And so the more that we can do to mitigate our impact, either locally and or globally, will really provide an opportunity for these corals to persist into the future.
Experts say protecting the reefs will continue to be a major challenge because of climate change and warming seas. Scientists say without action to reduce greenhouse gases, bleaching could become an annual event by the end of the century. Jim Randall, VOA News.
This news break from VOA Asia, a top Pakistani health official says authorities are battling one of the worst ever dengue fever outbreaks in the country, including the capital, Islamabad, as hospitals continue to receive scores of patients, putting strain on emergency services. The top official at the National Institute of Health there said that about 20,000 dengue cases and 34 deaths have been confirmed in recent months. Now on VOA Asia, 30 years ago, a deadly hurricane ripped through the beautiful city of Charleston, South Carolina. It destroyed many of its historic homes and buildings. A shortage of skilled artisans meant it took years to rebuild. Today, a generation of aspiring artists is learning traditional building skills at a local college where job placement is 100%. VOA's Julie Tabo traveled to the fast-developing coastal city to see how students and faculty at this unique college meet a growing and urgent need.
Alex Fisher grinds down an iron door handle. Jeremiah Price uses heat to soften the metal in his. Stephen Fancelli prefers working with wood, but all are enjoying the hands-on aspect of a special school in South Carolina.
I saw the school on a TV show, and my thought was, well, I wish I had known about this 10 years ago when I was actually looking at schools, and I decided to just make a change and come here.
The school is the American College of the Building Arts in the historic city of Charleston, which offers students intense hands-on training in traditional European craftsmanship. It was created after Hurricane Hugo ripped through this coastal city in 1989, destroying countless homes and historic buildings. In the aftermath, there was an urgent need for experienced artisans who knew how to rebuild the city, but there weren't enough of them. So it was a perfect opportunity for a traditional building arts school, which is the first and only four-year college in the country to offer such a program.
It's different and unique because we have blended a liberal arts education, you know, the critical thinking aspect of that, with a skill set that we teach six different skilled areas, so that a student leaves here with the art and the science of either preservation, quality construction, and the skills to be able to do it when they leave here.
Students also work off campus on local community projects. At this backyard garden in a residential area, students are building a children's playhouse using all natural materials.
So we are building with a method called rammed earth, which is a sustainable building method that goes back 7,000 years. The class is a hands-on building course where we try to give back to the community.
President Broadwater says that sense of community is important to the college.
We touch so many places and so many people, public projects that enhance the beauty of this city or state. The students are proud of actually producing something. That's why they came here. And so they can sit there and say, I made that.
Let's just put the soil right there.
Simeon Warren has been teaching at the college for 18 years.
You're working on 250-year-old monuments. The value and worth of that means you don't want to make any mistakes. That sense of worth for a person, I think, to actually know that their work is going to survive hundreds of years.
Perhaps that's why so many of the students are getting job offers even before they graduate. Lee Yarbrough has been working at this historic cemetery, helping to restore and stabilize several crumbling tombstones.
I actually already got a job offer last week, so, and he was like, let me know if anyone else is interested in hiring you, because I'll be competitive. So there's just a lot of opportunities after this.
30 years after Hurricane Hugo, Charleston is thriving. But should disaster strike again, members of its artisan community are well prepared. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Charleston, South Carolina.
Hundreds of spectators gathered recently at Washington, D.C.'s Wharf's District Pier to watch an unusual competition in speed and agility. Maxime Muskolov watched the four-legged race.
They might be small and low to the ground, but that doesn't mean they aren't fast. Dozens of winner dogs lined up to compete for the title of the fastest dachshund at a special competition held at the U.S. Capitol's Wharf's District Pier.
Today's event is mostly about fun. It's just to get the community together and have everyone have a good time.
Every year, hundreds of people come to watch the 10-meter race called Winner 500. This year, more than 120 dachshunds took part in the race, which some owners take very seriously.
We ate a big breakfast, massage her shoulders a little bit, and she'll be ready to go.
The first round was won by a dachshund named Latte.
She's been training for all 9 months that she's been alive. She was born to compete and win this race. Little legs, makes a fast dog. Latte is God-given talent, and she was able to execute today.
Dogs that didn't have the speed could also compete for beauty and stylishness.
Henry's just hanging out. He's not one of the fastest, but he loves to make new friends. Today he's a shark. I really think that exemplifies his personality.
The funds raised at the event will be passed on to the Humane Society to help homeless and abandoned animals find new loving families. The dachshund breed was created in Germany, so it was fitting that the race also marked the beginning of Oktoberfest. So while the pets were working hard, the owners, they were playing hard. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
Russia's President Vladimir Putin says Moscow was helping China build a system to warn of ballistic missile launches. Since the Cold War times, only the U.S. and Russia have had such systems, which involve an array of ground-based radars and space satellites. The systems allow for early spotting of intercontinental ballistic missiles. Speaking at Thursday's International Affairs Conference, Putin said Russia has been helping China develop a system. He added that this is a very serious thing that will radically enhance China's defense capability. His statement signaled a new degree of defense cooperation between the two former communist rivals that have developed increasingly close political and military ties. Bangladesh's Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina has arrived in India for a visit during which he's expected to sign agreements on increasing trade and investment and improving regional connectivity.
This is Science in a Minute.
For years, study after study provided evidence that eating a diet that includes red meat would put us at greater risk for ailments such as heart disease or cancer. A new international study led by researchers at two Canadian universities now suggests that most adults can continue to consume the same amount of red and processed meats they have been eating all along. The researchers conducted four extensive reviews of numerous trials and studies that gauged the increased risks of cardiovascular disease and cancer from consuming red and processed meats. In a text response to VOA, the American Heart Association says they continue to recommend that adults eat an overall healthy eating pattern with foods like vegetables, fruits, nuts, lean protein, and fish, and to avoid those with trans fats, sodium, and refined carbohydrates. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. Remember, you can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast. Take VOA Asia with you. Visit our voanews.com program page and see us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. And let's hear from you at VOA Asia Facebook and our email at voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter. Behind the controls, Sidrak Franklin. Our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hai Young and Afra. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.